This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 161. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088 167 691,
and you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
Well, it's a professional cricket week this week on Pitch Vision Academy, and that's because probably the most common question that we get at Pitch Vision Academy is, how do I become a cricketer? How do I play for a county? How do I play for a state? How do I play for my country? And there's a lot of passion and there's a lot of questions around that area, so I thought we'd focus on it a bit this week. There's been articles on the website all this week, and we're going to have a little chat about it this week, because one thing that we have on the show is a chap who's played professional cricket, he's coached international cricket, so he really knows what he's talking about when it comes to making the jump up from the amateur game to the professional game. So let me just do the introductions as we always do. Welcome along to the show, Gareth. Welcome along to the show, Berners.
Hello, fella, you all right?
Yes, I'm good. I'm good. How are you, Berners?
I'm good, thanks, mate.
So let's talk about the professional game. So, Gareth, what's it like being a professional compared to playing on a Saturday afternoon?
I mean, it all depends on the environment that you're in, really. And I think the game's changed significantly, particularly in England, since I finished playing. So the playing experience that people will be having nowadays will be very different to the one that I experienced. So I probably finished playing just as we were beginning to get into a proper professional mode. But looking back on my playing career, that, you know, it was some of the best times of my life, to be honest with you. And you don't necessarily always appreciate that at the time. And now I reminisce very fondly of the times that I had when I was playing at Hampshire.
How big is that psychological jump from doing it for fun, playing recreationally, and even if you've got big ambitions, you know, and big goals, you're still not getting paid to do it. And then you get yourself a contract and suddenly it's your job, you know, it's what you do to pay the rent as well as what you enjoy doing. How big is that psychological jump to make?
I think it's as big as you make it. To me, the word perspective in cricket is absolutely massive. And a lot of players that put themselves under pressure with every innings, every ball, reflecting back negatively and all of that sort of thing that we hear a lot of when we listen to the Sky Sports commentators and others, are the ones that ultimately are putting brakes on their potential and brakes on their performance. And so I think we've become better at coaches of actually taking the game back to what it is, which is a game of cricket, which is the same game of cricket that you play at weekends, David. It's the same game of cricket that KP plays. And that was something that came out hugely in the KP course that we did. It was about the enjoyment of it. It wasn't about the money element of it. It was about the enjoyment. It was about the challenge of playing against opponents. And that's the same whether you're playing for your third 11 at a club or whether you're playing in test matches. It's exactly the same, and the best players treat it exactly the same.
Berners, you've got a bit of a theory about what it takes to be a successful cricketer and make it to the top. You've been giving us some stats before we started recording.
Yeah, I read somewhere, I think it was on Twitter the other day, there was someone mentioned that 3 in 4 test players currently have gone through private school education. I know certainly when I was a youngster going through Devon's ranks, playing in the 10s, 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s, you knew pretty much from the outset that certain players were going to be in the mix and often, you know, given more of a chance, you'd say, just purely on the basis that the coaches knew that they had better means to an end with regards to the coaching and the level of cricket they were playing when they weren't playing for Devon. So I guess they made the assumption that it's better to hedge with a couple of these guys rather than some of the other kids that maybe you don't really know what they do in between. It has been something that's probably happened in the last 20 years and probably coming to an end somewhat now with regards to the whole kind of selection processes and the various policies that these cricket boards have in place.
Yeah, I mean, I can sort of back that up, really, because I'm sitting at Millfields Cricket Pavilion, and behind me, we've got a list of all of the ex-pupils that have gone on to play first-class cricket and play professional cricket and play international cricket as well. And there's, I mean, it's a huge board, as you can well appreciate. The interesting thing for me is going on from what Neil was saying, as selection processes become better, and as talent identification becomes better with county boards and academies around the country, and I know this is happening in other places over the world, there's less onus because the programs to develop players are more scientifically sorted out. They're not based on one bloke being able to coach and being like the Pied Piper anymore. It's not as likely that the next generation, and I'm not necessarily talking about the next 5 years, but the next 10 years, are going to have such a strong percentage of international cricketers coming out of public school. The other thing that's getting in the way of that as well is the scholarship system, because obviously in the recession that we're in now, the scholarships aren't as big a percentage of the school's fees, which, you know, I remember back in 1989, I got offered a scholarship to Millfield School, and I think it was an 80% scholarship of the fees. Well, certainly our school, and I know a lot of other schools, aren't in a position now to offer those out as numerously any longer. So that's also having an effect. But most importantly, I think the talent identification systems, the coach development models, the player development models around the world are far more sophisticated than they were when this present group of test match cricketers were first being identified. And as a result, there will be less onus on it being a public school in the way that Neil reminisces when we go forward 15 years or so.
And it's important to say that it's not just a matter of reputation of a school or a facility taking advantage over people actually being selected on merit, because a lot of the times, whether you're in England and you're going to a school where they've got very good facilities because they're a private school, or you're in India and you're paying to go to a private academy, you're going to have better coaching, better facilities, so you're going to improve more than someone who hasn't got access to that coaching and that facility. So that's where sort of money comes into the, always will come into the frame. If you've got money and you can spend it on cricket, on improving, then you're going to get better faster than if you haven't got money and you're playing in the street. It doesn't mean if you're playing in the street or, you know, playing a club game or playing at an academy where it's less expensive that you are never going to succeed, but it just means you've got one more hurdle to overcome, I think.
Also, one thing to add, our club at Ealing, probably one of the only clubs recently that have turned in two professional contracts off the back of them both playing amateur cricket throughout the year. Last year, with Ned Eckersley getting a contract at Leicestershire, where he started nearly every game this season. And also one of our young bowlers, after bowling in the ECB Cockspur final, got a deal with Middlesex, a young fast bowler called Oliver Wilkins. So it just goes to show that, you know, if you do what you're supposed to do and what it says on the tin, sometimes people will take notice and give you a chance. But two highly talented cricketers that could have just probably ended up playing club cricket for the next 10 or 15 years have now found themselves in a very exciting predicament at the start of this season.
Which is a great story, and exactly right, and perfect for people that are out there listening to this that maybe don't have access to the to public schools, to academies and the such like as well. It's a great lesson. The other thing I think is a major player in this is our ability to communicate information around now is so much more. So whereas it was possible 25 years ago for somebody to be dominating a league in the middle of nowhere, and nobody outside of the local vicinity really knowing about that player, that doesn't happen now. You know, with internet, with social networking, with all of those things, everybody knows what's going on. If you want to find out who's dominating, a league in Wiltshire, you can find that out nowadays. Whereas in years gone by, it would only be the teams in that league that would know about that person. So there are lots of ways for people to be identified. And I know we're talking about England a lot here, But actually, you know, social networking is a worldwide phenomenon, and as a result, people will get picked up. And if there's one person that gets to play professional cricket and reach their goal and their dream as a result of social networking, then it's shown that it's a very, very useful thing to have.
Absolutely. Everything we've talked about here applies in all the major cricket playing countries in the world, and probably in most of the minor ones as well. So it doesn't matter where you're listening to this, Australia, India, Pakistan, New Zealand, wherever you happen to be listening to this, the same thing really applies, that whatever your situation is, that you can work hard and you can achieve it if you do things in the right way. So hopefully that's given people some hope. Let's finish off this introduction with our usual yes-no round. And as we do every week, we just answer yes or no to each of the three questions that Berners has without any discussion. It can be frustrating sometimes because I know I want to say more, and I'm pretty sure Gareth does, but all we get to do is say yes or no. So, Berners, what are the three questions in the yes-no round this week?
Okay, first question. The phrase being realistic is shorthand for pessimism.
No.
Yes.
Second question. Talent is overrated.
Yes.
Yes.
Third question, Dirk Nanez is the exception that proves the rule that you can break into professional cricket over the age of 25.
No.
No.
Time now for this week's interview on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. And this week I'm delighted to be joined by Phil Oliver, who is head coach of the Unicorns, which is a team in quite a unique position in English cricket. So for those people who are listening and they're not sure who the Unicorns are and what their relevance is in cricket, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, David. The Unicorns is an ECB recreational side, which is made up of any player who hasn't got a contract at a first-class county. That could be a Premier League player, Division 1 and Division 2 players, or minor counties players, university players. And that's basically, we're just an ECB recreational side, you know, in demand at the moment.
But you play against county first teams in the 40-over competition.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, we play Clydesdale, which is mainly Sundays. It's about six games each side of the break.
Seems to me that's a valuable opportunity for players who aren't playing professionally, but they feel like they're at the top of the amateur game, the recreational game, and they want that stepping stone. They want the chance to prove themselves against the next level up. So how would somebody who is playing amateur cricket get into consideration for the Unicorns?
Well, what we do at the end of each season, what we'll do at the end of this season, we'll send out emails to chairmen of leagues and captains of leagues and executive committee of leagues asking for nominations. It'll also go open to, on the ECB website, you can send in your own nomination to ECB. We will then look through it. We had over nearly 400 last year that we had to look through and obviously find records for and find out where they were playing, who they were playing for, and what they do. And then after then, we will get it down to trial basis, where we sort of have three or four trials and try to get it down to the 100 best people in recreational cricket. And that's the process. From there, we will try to bring it down to a squad of 30, which is obviously very difficult because what happens is, some of the best players in Premier Division cricket obviously do go abroad, and obviously we have to try and keep a tab on those, you know, what they're doing in the winter, just to try and get it down to a squad of 30 by hopefully the end of March.
And what kind of ages do you select?
We're looking for the younger guys, really. We're looking for the people probably not exceeding more than 26, 27. Anybody under that, then yeah, we'll obviously consider. I mean, we do have experience in the side. We have Keith Parsons as a captain, who well-known Somerset cricketer, played in a couple of finals. You know, good captain. We do need a couple of experienced players around, but we tend to pick those out of somebody who's been released from a county or has played a lot of a lot of first class cricket, just to help the younger guys along, just to, you know, to help us along, really.
And obviously, numbers are something that you look at when you're thinking about these kind of players. You look at how many runs they've scored, how many wickets they've taken at a decent level of amateur cricket. But is there something else that you look for as well? Is there a mental approach that you try and pick out in the trials as well?
Well, it is. Once we get down to that 100, then, the backroom staff come in, the bowling coaches come in, the fielding coaches come in, the physios. Obviously, people have to be very, very fit to compete, in Clydesdale 40-over cricket. Our backroom staff, we've got 5 or 6 people who work behind the scenes when we get it sort of down to that 100. And then when we move on to the final 30, there's a lot of one-on-ones, there's a lot of discussions, there's a lot of how people react, what's gone wrong, if they have been at a county, or, player input is very important when we get down to that final 30. So, we tend to let the guys express themselves a little bit more than if a guy was under a contract, if you know what I mean. They have they have room to express themselves and join in and try to help, make them a better player.
So if you were advising someone, if there was someone who's listening to this now and they were keen and they thought they had the numbers behind them, what would you say be the 3 most important things beyond runs and wickets that you look for in a character of somebody?
I would just mental toughness, because it is tough playing first class cricket, especially, when the guys are not all together. I mean, we do get them together probably once a fortnight through the winter, but then the games, we don't actually see them from Sunday to Sunday. So mental toughness when they go well prepared, being fit, so they don't have to worry about the fitness. So, they're not lacking in fitness. And then just confidence in their own ability, confidence that they can compete at that level, because, it is a confidence game, especially as a batter against, playing against first-class bowlers. Be confident in your own ability.
Well, Phil, thank you very much for your time on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show today. Hopefully that's inspired some people to get out there and do the business on the park, knowing that they've got the opportunity to come up against higher standard players and maybe get their own contract at some point.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we had a turnaround. I mean, from the previous season, 2011, out of the squad of 30, we only kept 10 of those guys. So that means there were 20 new guys came into the squad. So hopefully we can keep that turning over every year. If the quality's there and people are available, then that squad will keep rotating. It has to keep rotating for us to fulfil our role with ECB to get some of these guys onto contract, get some of these guys, playing better cricket, and hopefully, win a few games along the way as well.
It's about time that we dipped into the mailbag this week on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. And as you know, every week we have a competition to win a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy to find out all about our online coaching videos, audio worksheets and ebooks. So this week we got 2 questions, and the best of those will win the prize. So, Berners, you've got those. What are the questions this week?
First question's in from Mansour, and very relevant. He wants to be a professional cricketer. He's 13, good pace bowler, can also bat, and he just wants to know how often he should train. How many hours a day should he bend his back and get his eyes and feet moving in those nets?
Well, I'd say 2 things about that. The first thing is it's not just about volume. The amount of practice is, of course, important, but it's what type of practice you're doing as well. If you're doing the wrong type of practice, then you can be wasting your time. So make sure first that you're doing the right amount of practice. And we use the term deliberate practice a lot on this show. And that just means the type of practice that helps you improve quickly. So, for example, deliberate practice would be if you're a bowler, bowling at a target and seeing how successful you are at hitting the length that you want to hit, whatever happens to be a Yorker, a good length ball bounce, or whatever it happens to be. So point one, make sure that you're doing quality practice as well as quantity practice. And then how many hours a day should you practice? As many as it takes to make sure that you feel like you are confident when you walk out into the middle. It's going to vary for different people, depending on how much time you've got available, and also depending on how fit you are, and also depending on how confident you are. So I wouldn't like to put a specific number on it. I've probably got a rough number in my head, but I wouldn't like to put a specific number on it. I'd like to just keep it a bit vaguer than that and say, do as much as you can until you feel like you are walking out to the middle with a bit more confidence than you had before.
Yeah, I'm going to ask a couple of questions and then try to answer it, really. Firstly, how many hours a day should I practice? To me, the first thing you do is define what practice is. And I completely agree with a deliberate practice thing, which I'll come back to in a minute. But, you know, practice isn't just bowling in the nets and batting in the nets and fielding drills. And I think sometimes when we get questions on this show, I read into it that that's the assumption. You know, practice is doing your core exercises. Practice is also stretching. Practice is doing your sprint training. It's doing your weights training. It's doing your visualization. It's doing your review of the previous innings so you can learn from some mistakes, learn from some strengths. It's all of those things. So how many hours a day should you do that practice? To go back to David's point of deliberate practice has to be challenging all of the time. You know, if you want to have a net where you're facing off spin and you're a fantastic player of off spin, then great, go ahead and do it. But that won't be deliberate practice. And to me, that should almost be scrubbed off your week's worth of practice. You should always be looking to get better. And that's why measurements are fantastic things to have. So to go back to David's target bowling thing, absolutely fantastic. A way to do a target bowling and to challenge yourself even more is to make that target even smaller, or to try and increase the amount of times that you're hitting that same target over and over again and not being happy until you do it. So measurements are a key part of deliberate practice, and also having somebody to work off of you and alongside you to keep pushing you as well. Because, you know, a lot of us, and I'll talk myself as well, I always train better with somebody else than I train on my own. So if I did a spin session 2 days ago with one of our young lads and ended up doing 2 kilometers more in the same amount of time as I did the previous Friday when I was doing it on my own. So if you're that type of person, make sure you've got somebody to keep pushing you. Some people can push themselves on their own and go to that challenging place on their own. But certainly for myself, speaking from my own experience, if I've got somebody with me, then I'm much more likely to get myself into that deliberate practice mode. So those would be my bits of advice. How many hours? Well, if you do 1 hour of deliberate practice, to me, that's better than doing 4 hours of comfortable, you know, not really pushing yourself practice. So, if you do 20 hours of deliberate practice a week, then you've got a blooming good chance of achieving your goal, I'd suggest.
Was the fact you bolted that extra 2K on that you were actually racing against a 10-year-old, Gareth?
Absolutely right. He's 15, actually. He's 15, and we go running together as well, because he's a fantastically talented batsman. He's playing in our first team and doing very, very well at the moment. And he's somebody who identified, and we all identified, it was fairly obvious that the fitness element was something that he was lacking in. But to me, the way to sell it to him, and we've discussed it heaps, is he wants to be a run maker. He doesn't see himself as a batter. He sees himself as a run maker. And in order for him to concentrate over long periods of time, to make effective decisions, to be able to bat in four-day cricket and also be able to run between the wickets massively quickly and then get back and still have his concentration to play the next ball to the best of his ability, he needed to increase his fitness. So we're doing it in a variety of ways. But just watching him walk around school now as a 15-year-old an under-16-year-old, is fantastic, because he's carrying himself so much better. And that's not necessarily because he's bigger or stronger, but just because he feels stronger in himself. And so far, he's gone out there against guys that are two and a half years older than him and gone out and been able to compete very, very hard out on the cricket field this summer, which has been fantastic. But every session that he does with his other coaches and myself, he takes himself to a level now where he's in that deliberate practice mode. And as a result, his results are improving day on day.
But to go back to that number that you gave us, Gareth, is that 20 hours a week. If somebody can't put that amount of time aside, that still shouldn't discourage you from doing as much as you can.
No, absolutely right. I mean, if you can do, there's no definitive number. We talked about 20 hours a week a few years ago, but when we were doing academy stuff, if I think back on that 20 hours that a lot of them were getting, how much of it was in the deliberate zone? Probably looking at 5 or 6 hours in that deliberate zone. So, and yet they, you know, the likes of James Hildreth came out of that academy. Joss Butler came out of that academy. On the back of 6 hours of absolute quality deliberate practice a week. So, you know, you can't really put a number on it. But the more hours that you're putting in that deliberate fashion, where you're challenging yourself, the more likely you are to be able to stick your head into the professional ranks and do it with confidence. We talk about robust confidence. Kevin Peterson talks about robust confidence, and there's somebody who pushes himself every single day. You know, Alistair Cookie is another classic example. You know, Cookie, I can remember watching him at 15 where people were saying he shouldn't have played in the England 15 side because he couldn't hit it off a square. You know, he was working hard then. He was working deliberately then. And now look at him. I mean, he's going to break every record out there.
Next question's from Varun. He wants to improve his fielding. He's got a big problem at the moment that he's just started his own league in a city. Nice position to be in. It's actually going to be called the Delhi Premier League, and it's going to go on for around a month. As a result of this, they're not able to do any fielding drills at the ground as it remains occupied for the whole day, so they don't have much space. They're restricted to just the net areas. Also the districts where they are, if anyone's been to India, you don't really get a lot of options around there. So he's just wondering about any kind of fielding drills you could do that would fit in to this kind of standard.
Well, Gareth, this is a bit of a specialist subject for you, isn't it? Getting fielding done in a small space.
Absolutely, mate. I need, for me to run a fielding practice with one person or two people or three people, I need a tennis ball, either a chalk set of stumps and a brick wall, and you don't need particularly a huge amount of space. And I'm sure that in India, from my experience, you've got quite a lot of walls around the place. And thinking back to the number of my friends' houses and areas around my friends' houses in India, you know, there's lots of alleyways that you can do heaps of practice in. And I without answering the question sort of it directly. We went on tour to Australia a few years ago, and I did a session with Chris Reed and Geraint Jones next to some bins, next to a sports centre, because the nets were all full inside. And you can use your imagination. As long as you've got a ball, and a tennis ball, obviously, if you're working up against walls, or maybe a squash ball or something, you can do some catching off of it. You can put up a set of stumps next to a wall and throw a ball on the angle, so you're running round the ball, getting your body into position and throwing it back at the stumps. You know, going away from fielding, you can be. I spent hours, and Don Bradman, crikey, the best batter who's ever played the game, spent hours throwing a golf ball up against a wall or up against a surface and getting it rebounding back and hitting balls back off of that wall. Creating games around yourself is so important. And to me, I've worked in a squash court for the first part of the time out here. I was at Millfield, and the work that was done in that month and a half period has really underpinned the success that the players, particularly in the field, have had. So catching technique, we've got a lad called Chris McMorran who stands at first slip for us, and in the limited amount of cricket that we've had so far this year, has had 7 chances to take slip catches at good pace, and he took another one again yesterday, which makes 8 off of a spinner standing up. You can simulate all of that stuff in the smallest of areas. Use your imagination, and we talk about nets there. Well, nets, you can throw into nets, all right, and get your throw-in technique right. You can set up a set of stumps 20 yards away, as we do when we're bowling. And just throw at the stumps. One of Richard Hassall's drills for England cricket when he first came in as fielding coach for England cricket was to set up stumps 20 metres apart and get people to throw at stumps. You have 10 throws in there before you start play and you monitor how many of those balls hit three sets of stumps. And then when people were hitting 8 or 9 out of 10, he took one stump out and then he'd monitor how many times they'd hit that set of stumps. So there you go. You've got two areas. You've got a brick wall on the side of a building. You've got your net area. You can be doing absolutely heaps without having to get out onto the grounds where the league's being played.
Time now for this week's soapbox. And every week, one of the members of the team gets their chance to rant for 60 seconds without being interrupted on the subject of their choice, as long as it's related to cricket or cricket coaching. So this week it's Gareth. Gareth, over to you for your soapbox.
Well, this week I'm going to talk about early season conditions, and anybody who's played cricket in or tried to play cricket in England this year will realise that the ball's going to dart around a fair bit. But we quickly get into 2020 cricket, we quickly get into one-day cricket, and I watch so many games where the bowlers on these helpful wickets go away from simple bowling plans and start bowling, trying to bowl Yorkers or trying to bowl slower balls just because that's what the format tells them. They watch IPL on the telly and they see all these skills being done and then they go out there and try and bowl it. Yet the wicket, actually, if you hold length and you hit the top of off stump, the ball's going to do enough and keep you in the game. And I defy any batter in these conditions at the moment to be able to swing through length balls that are moving laterally and smash you over the boundary. So stick your slower balls away until the match situation or a batter dictates that you should have to use those, because the conditions are in your favour. Hold the seam up, swing it, and you'll get your rewards.
That's all we've got time for on this week's Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. But before we go, we need to pick a winner for this week's competition. So the prize, of course, is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy, pitchvision.com. And you can have a look at the range of courses if you go to pitchvision.com/academy. So we had a question from Ansel about how much he should practice to become a professional. And a question from Varun about practicing in a very small space. So, Gareth, which one is going to win the competition this week?
This week I'm going to go for Varun.
Congratulations, Varun. And if you want to send in your own question, you can do so in a number of different ways. Bernice, you have the telephone number and email address there?
Indeed. Give us a call on 020-88-167-691 or drop us an email, and the address for that is coach@pitchvision.com.
You can also get international numbers on the website at pitchvision.com/academy. You can get us through Twitter. We're PV Cricket Coach on there. And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can do so through iTunes. Just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and you'll find us on iTunes. Or you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy. Click on the podcast link at the top and there's the feed details in there if you don't want to use iTunes. Now, that's just about the end of the show. But before we go, we've got our tail ender, our term of the week. This week is one which I don't know how popular it is. It's the Michelle. Is that a common phrase around your parts, gentlemen?
Well, I have heard this mentioned, actually. So, but I'm hoping that the context is exactly the same. So I'm not willing to stick my head above the parapet until I actually know what it is.
Right.
The definition that I've used is one thing. So okay. I might be able to say, yes, that's the same one, or I might actually make a fool of myself. So I'm not willing to do that just
okay.
yet.
Okay. And have you heard it before, Berners? Is it a
comment? I've come across the fifer, yeah.
Yeah, the Michelle fifer, five wicket haul for a bowler. Simple as that. You call it a Michelle sometimes. Gareth, you got a rude one, have you?
No. I'm on the right lines. Don't you worry. I just didn't want to be a little bit sort of 1990s, lads. I thought you might be a bit more current, but fair enough. You're back in my era.
Well, we're always looking for slightly unusual terms because cricket is a game of strange terms. But you never know how much somebody knows about these sort of ones or not. So yeah, if you've got your own, which you've used, but you haven't heard for a while, or maybe you've decided that you're going to make one up, then send it in, coach@pitchvisions.com. We'll accept those. And if not, we'll be back next week with another old-fashioned term. See you, Gareth. See you, Bernard.
See you, fella.
See ya.